Hey there, welcome back to Reality TV. I'm very excited about today's episode because it almost feels like two brand new shows. Love After Lockup is back, as well as 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. This week, I'm going to have my recap of Married at First Sight over on Patreon, so you can check that out. But before I jump into Love After Lockup, I have to talk about what we are all just edging about this weekend. You know what I'm going to say. Cynthia Bailey got married. I know, you woke up Saturday morning, you ran to Twitter, you knew it was going to be a buzz. The photos that came out of that wedding, I am so embarrassed for Cynthia. Please go and check out PeopleMagazine.com. They got the exclusive. The two photos that they have posted, okay, I have to pull it up here. She looks beautiful, okay? The dress has that illusion thing that all the housewives wear to all the reunions where, I mean, it's not see-through. It's almost like a figure skater see-through kind of mesh thing. And then a whole lot of beading. But the angle she's standing at is just like a very odd angle. It almost looks like she has a bad case of scoliosis. Oh, or scoliosis, if you listen to the Marriage Bootcamp recaps. She's just like at an odd stance where it looks like one hip is disproportionately higher than the other. And then her husband, Mike Hill, oh, I never put two and two together, Jesus. Okay, he's wearing a sparkly, bedazzled blazer, and you see the profile of him, the entire side of his body. One foot might be pointed, like one toe might be pointed, and his face is kind of like smushed against hers, and it's very odd. He's kind of crumpled up. He has one finger pointing. The most bizarre photo that you would choose to publish. You would at least do like both of you facing the camera, right? All right. Well, the second one I think is even more embarrassing. They are sitting on like a little settee couch that's clearly in a hallway, a very narrow hallway in a hotel room. So there is a very geometrically patterned wallpaper all over the walls. And then this little settee is angled, barely fitting. Like it almost looks like someone was moving and they figured that they couldn't get the couch to the hallway. So they just like put it down there and they're like, well, I guess we're gonna have to cut it in half. That's what it looks like. And the two of them are sitting on this little settee, staring at each other, doing barely an Eskimo kiss, ever so lightly tips of their nose touching, which I don't feel like many couples would do. I wouldn't want to feel someone breathing on my face that closely, especially during these COVID times. I don't care, married or not. And his tie, I just noticed this, is extraordinarily skinny. It might even be technically a bolo tie. I mean, it's not string, but if that's two pieces of fabric together, that is very slim, a very, very slim tie and sparkly jacket. And now that I'm looking closely at this and being a complete bitch about it, why would she have goldish sparkles, but his jacket is very silver? I don't like any of it. I actually don't like that she's marrying him because I don't think she's got the best picker, but at least we'll have a great next three seasons as they're hashing it out, probably heading towards divorce. I'm just a ray of sunshine today, aren't I? All right, let's get into Love After Lockup. I missed these couples. I'm going to start with a bang here. Let's talk about Sean and Destiny. Now, you know, one of my favorite quotes, not necessarily favorite people, but one of my favorite quotes is from Oprah herself. And she said something along the lines of, "The universe whispers to you, and when you don't listen, it gets louder and louder until it basically knocks you on your ass." Something similar to that. And the Iraq and such as. Shout out to Miss Teen South Carolina. Whatever happened to her? Anyhow, in this scenario, this whisper is more like a gale force windstorm named Destiny. And Destiny has sucker punched Sean right square in the face. Yet that punch was the precise moment Sean realized that he just needs to propose to Destiny. And I quote, "Once the proposal comes out, I think that's what's going to take to settle her down. That'll just change everything. I think I can change her." That is, of course, if Destiny and Sean's ex meet and get along. And if they don't, according to Sean, it could be World War V. Oh, God, Sean. It's quite clear Sean went to the same learnings places as Leah from Teen Mom and her girls is, y'all. So this guy has made several children, which makes me very concerned because he's multiplied his DNA across the states. So let's just hope at least his children listen to Oprah and they don't do anything that their father has done. So let's remember here that Sean has $50,000 on the line that he's going to have to pay if Destiny goes AWOL. If she decides to break up with him and take off and take his credit card with her, not only is he going to max out all his credit, he's going to be spending money, owing money that he does not have. I do not feel badly for Sean. I don't think anyone watching this show has any sort of empathy for him because he's a liar. He's a creep and he's a pervert. I do feel badly for his kids, who obviously he puts at least third in line, because first comes himself, then Destiny, probably like some truck or that 50 grand that he's going to have to pay, and then his kids, and put in anyone before that who he wants to sleep with in the Comfort Inn jacuzzi and tub suites. I do love that friend, though. He is one of the best voices of reasons that we've had in many seasons of many shows. Now, I'm going to talk about Dylan and Heather next. I was going to wait to talk about them for last, but they are really the scariest couple. These two scare me the most out of anyone that has ever been on this show. Dylan is such a smooth talker, but in a nonchalant way. Like, he doesn't overdo it. He's not super smarmy. He doesn't set off alarm bells to most people, probably because he's a good-looking guy. But he has that huge, extensive rap sheet with pretty serious charges on there. So he's more of a Dirty John type. You know, he's going to really wine and dine you before he screws you over. You know, he'll be the one to kiss your Aunt Diane, put on a little humble charm. And the next thing you know, Dylan's going to be wearing scrubs. He's going to be saying he's the top pharmaceutical sales rep or some shit, when really he's conning another 12 women and starting a Ponzi scheme. That's the type of guy, that's the type of felon that Dylan is. But Heather is possibly even a bigger mess than Dylan. I don't want to say I worry for Aunt Diane's prescription stockpile and or valuable jewelry she may have in the house, but I just did. Heather is manic, like scary manic, and that temper tantrum she threw, crazy. We have to remember that Heather is not some 22-year-old. She's 33, but she was acting maybe like a, what, 15, 16, 17-year-old level at best. And I wasn't fooled by Dylan playing the nice guy in that situation. It worked for him because he could look, in comparison to Heather, like the straight arrow. And I want to believe that he's sincere, but I do not, at least yet. I think in that moment, he was just embarrassed. I think everyone was embarrassed for the way that Heather was basically demanding Dylan penetrate her immediately in front of her two aunts and a camera crew, probably some neighbors passing by the house. I mean, she is so unabashedly, just unashamed, unabashedly unashamed. Does that make sense? I guess what I'm trying to say is Heather is dangerous in a volatile way. Dylan is dangerous in a schemer, premeditated, subtle, long game way. Okay, let's jump to Maurice and Jessica. Well, Maurice has finally gotten permission to live in Vegas. Thank God. I'm doing the sign of the cross here because I really didn't want him to get sent back to prison. And I don't know if it has been the time away from this crazy show for us, but Maurice was looking especially hot, right? He's very good looking. He's got that cute baby face, but not in a creepy. I feel like I just sounded like Mary Kay Letourneau. But anyway, I would want to make a baby with him too. This soon after he's gotten released and he's got no job and just move into the house? Absolutely not. But I wouldn't say Jessica is the best decision maker. You know, she's worried what her parents are going to say about her being pregnant, but I'm worried because I am very concerned that she doesn't seem 100% coherent in her one-on-ones. It seems like she's very slurry. She's always fighting to keep her eyes open. I mean, maybe in real time she has a newborn. I don't know. I don't know where they are on social media. If someone knows if she ended up having the baby, please let me know because I'm legitimately concerned. She seems high, doesn't she? Or maybe I just don't know enough about drugs. I only know what Dare taught me, and she looks a little loopy to me. Now, Quaylon and Chevelle, wow, talk about a crazy storyline this week. Quaylon talks to Chevelle's pastor, and he tells Quaylon he needs a plan. Ooh. All right, well, it seems that he flipped a switch in Quaylon's brain because as soon as they got in the car, Quaylon decided things are moving too fast with Chevelle. And he starts a fight with Chevelle in front of her daughter, which automatically, I don't care what happens from here on out, Quaylon's officially a monster to me now because you do not start an argument in front of your own kids. Well, sure, okay, Dave and I have had arguments, but not like that. And I certainly would not be picking a fight with someone when their child is in the car. And I don't think Chevelle deserves that treatment. Now, Shonda and Tyrese. Oh, God, I enjoyed watching this so, so much. Probably too much, but I am not ashamed about it at all. Now, you're going to want to sit down for this one. Because remember how Tyrese fell in love with Shonda while she was licking and finger popping that chicken grease off of her COVID-y fingers? And then how she really meant, I see forever in your eyes, Tyrese, when she told him she needed $200 in cash in fives and tens only. Well, it turns out Shonda's missing. That's going to be a new podcast coming to Apple Podcasts soon. Shonda's missing. One man, Tyrese's quest to find the love of his life. Only he only knows her first name and the size of her thick, juicy ass. I'm sorry, you guys. This one is just such a doozy, but it's so enjoyable to watch because Tyrese was so sanctimonious and condescending to everyone who thought he was being scammed. And we find out that Tyrese hasn't gotten far in his search. I mean, we're going to be in episode one still for his Shonda's Missing podcast. He spent 2 months without hearing from her. 2 months. He hasn't been able to get through to her on her phone. She isn't on social media. It seems photos of her are disappearing, like in Back to the Future. It's so weird. I mean, I'm sure that Shonda's just locked up in jail, right? She's in a jail that's off the grid. It's like a new thing. You know, they don't have phone, internet, or electricity or any communication with the outside world. It's like one of those biodomes. You've heard of that, right? I mean, otherwise, Shonda would have called Tyrese. It's got to be that she's in a new age prison. I just don't get it. I felt like these two were like a modern day sleepless in Seattle. They just kept missing each other here, there, at the top of the Empire State Building, the bus depot. We all thought they were MFEO, made for each other. And now this. All right, Scott and Lindsay, DeBell's a DeBall. Seems Mr. Moneybags, Mr. Outback Steakhouse to Go is at it again. Such a fine, fine influence on Lindsay these days. Slide her ankle monitor off. Maybe tell her parole officer that they really have 5 acres so she can go for a jog. Cute little game, isn't it? I bet little Miley Cyrus thinks it's adorable to test the prison system's limit with her absentee mom. God, Scott, you are just such a great guy. Ugh. Okay, so Scott is still complaining to us how he's sleeping on the couch. He hasn't had sex with Lindsay. And he's saying it in a way like we're supposed to feel badly for him. But I would like to think he's not succeeding with any of us watching, because sure, Lindsay is using him, but he's clearly using her too. He just wants a helpless, hot young piece of ass who's so thankful that she'll do anything for her big man who's got a pen cap lip injury and a busted ass pickup. I mean, Lindsay is looking for a sugar daddy, sure, but Scott can't even afford to get some Abreva for that lip. So there's a reason, Lindsay, that Scott has not done shit around his house, and it's not because his interior designer's been slacking or because of COVID. It's because he doesn't have the money. So let's just take a moment right here to break this all down. Lindsay's trapped there because the ankle monitor bullshit, the COVID stuff. And even though she probably has a feeling that he's lying at this point, because take a look around, what is she going to do? But she also got herself in that situation because she's a user and she's a liar too. Now, I want to take a minute to talk about this moment at the glass door between Lindsay and her daughter. It was heartbreaking to watch because little Miley Cyrus is looking at her mom, and the way she was looking at her was almost like she was watching a mirage, or like she's looking at a Disney princess, her first time at Disney World. It's like it's not even happening. It's not real for her because she hasn't seen her in so long. And probably the way Lindsay is acting towards her is not the mom she really was, but it's the mom little Miley has idealized her to be, if that makes any kind of sense. Like, Lindsay says all the right things about, I did this to you and I'm so sorry, I caused this. Well, I guess she said that to us. I don't know if she said that to little Miley, but it doesn't really matter. There's no emotion behind Lindsay's eyes. There was no emotion in the words that she was saying, because at the end of the day, she still sees herself as a victim. You know, she was victims of the bullies in the prison. She's a victim of the prison system. She's a victim of COVID, you know, like the rest of the world. And really, the only victim in this entire scenario is Lindsay's daughter. But let's get back to Scott, who's sitting there next to Lindsay, and I'm going to need him to back the fuck off and let Lindsay talk to her kid alone for a moment, please. Did that bug anyone else that Scott's sitting there getting all cozy next to Lindsay? He's putting his arm around her. He's talking into the phone, talking over Lindsay at certain points, thinking he's making hilarious jokes. It's not about you, Scott. It's about mother and daughter having a moment. Could you go do something? Go flick around another pen cap in your lip? You know, or go clean the floors. So maybe Lindsay can, actually in his words, where's the quote here? Oh, he said, I hope Lindsay can get past the dirty house and get intimate. Yeah, it's the dirty floors that doesn't do it for Lindsay. This whole family dynamic is so messed up. And what's going to get even more tragic is that little Miley is going to feel like she lost Scott too, even though she never had him. She probably never really wanted him. But they've built up this whole fake family fun time. I don't know why I just got a flash of, Jesus, what was that show? The one with Suzanne Summers and then the guy who went to prison. Oh, shit. Now I'm going to have to Google this. Suzanne Summers TV show. Oh, okay. Step by Step. Yes. I just had flashes of Step by Step, them running around at a carnival. That's what Miley Cyrus was thinking that they were going to be doing. She's going to be swinging on the wrecking ball at the county fair. But here we are. She's face to face with her mom through a dirty screen door. And it's all Scott's fault and Lindsay, but mostly Scott. It's now October and I am still feeling my feels. Now, there are sponsors that I pass on because I just don't enjoy or use their products or services, but Feels CBD is not one of them. Full disclosure, I received a sample way back in January, I believe, but since then, I have become an actual paying customer using my own promo code. I hope you've tried Feels by now, or you will give it a try because I know you'll love it as much as I do. CBD has been proven to reduce anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness, but Feels isn't your everyday gas station CBD. It's premium CBD that's sourced and made here in the U.S., and it provides a gentle, natural solution without a hangover or high. You just put a small dropper full under your tongue, and for me, in about 10 minutes, I'm realizing I'm not breathless and I'm able to focus without feeling anxious. If you're new to CBD like I was, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience, and there's no commitment. You can pause, cancel, or change anything at any time, truly no strings attached. I love Feels, and I love knowing there's an all-natural way to feel better. Become a member today by going to feels.com/realityTV, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feels, feals.com/realitytv to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. That's feels.com/realitytv. All right. Well, let's move on to some other crazy couples. A 90 Day Fiancé the other way. We pick up right where we left off with Sumit walking over to his parents' apartment to confront them about Jenny. And it was super intense. And we all knew, you know, it wasn't going to be puppies and rainbows. But when Sumit started yelling at his mom in that way, I was more or less equally parts terrified, offended, and enraged, because who the hell are you to be talking to your mother that way? But also, don't come after me, Sumit, because there was a devil behind his black eyes. I wonder if Jenny has ever seen that side of him, because it was terrifying. But as they were arguing, I kept saying out loud enough to have my whole family get involved, "Why do you have to get married? Just pretend there is a piece of paper. If Jenny doesn't mind living in India, why do they have to go through the formal process of getting married? Like, who cares? Can't they just continue living together without being married?" Jenny seems to be the only one that's really pushing for a legal marriage. So why doesn't Sumit just tell her that's not going to be a possibility, that marriage is off the table, but they can still be together? I mean, part of it is, sure, he doesn't like telling the truth and he doesn't want to tell her, but come on, Jenny's going to see his parents saying that marriage will never be agreed to, but they can hopefully grow to accept them being together when she sees this or saw it last night. So he just needs to tell her that. And if Jenny doesn't like it and she can't live with that, she can't live without that piece of paper, at least Sumit knows that he's exhausted all of his options. He tried his best. And the same goes for Jenny, that she tried everything. Okay, Brittany and Yazin. Oh my God. I'm jumping into the previews already because I am terrified for Yazin at this point. Does anyone know if there's some sort of proof of life? Because really his life is at stake here, but we're not even there yet. Jesus. Okay, so Brittany flies into Chicago to see her mom, but more importantly, to attend her court hearing. Because remember that little detail about her still being married? That little technicality that makes it impossible for Brittany to even become or have a 90 Day Fiancé? Yeah, this crazy, like, I really think she is psychologically crazy. This crazy bitch is still trying to convince everyone that she's somehow still a victim in all of this. It's like she wants all the people in her life to think that Yazin is this off-the-charts control freak. All of a sudden, he wants to change who she is. She has no idea why he is doing this to her. So how her mom is sitting there seems like a smart woman, right? How is she sitting there not smacking her upside the head? I'm a mother, and I wanted to smack my own kid, even though they're not Brittany. Like, tell her she chose to move to a Muslim country. Like it or not, whether he changed or not, she moved to their country. She's going to have to follow their customs and their norms if she wants to marry a very out and loud and proud, devout, conservative Muslim man. Ugh, I know, I'm ranting the same obvious thing week after week. And guess what? It doesn't matter anyway, because Brittany isn't any closer to being divorced after she goes to the courthouse. She claims the court messed up her paperwork. They didn't file anything. Can I talk to your manager? She's pulling a real Karen here. But based on everything we've learned about Brittany, I'm gonna say, and Maury too, that is a lie. It's either a lie or a really stupid mistake, because, you know, Brittany isn't one for details or rule following. So I think it's pretty safe to say she probably got a letter saying, "We still need some of your paperwork, so you're going to have to come and submit it." And she took that as, "Oh, I'm going to go in and they're going to give me a divorce decree." She's a fucking moron. And so help me, if she gets this guy killed, I won't be able to do anything because I'll be terrified too. But I will hate her even more. So there. All right, Armando and Kenny, really the couple we've all been on pins and needles about for the past, month, 6 weeks? So finally, these two are on their way to Armando's parents' house. They're going to pick up Hannah, and Kenny's going to meet the family. And there's a lot of anxiety packed in that little sedan. I felt bad for the dog because I felt like in that moment, he was an unwilling therapy dog. He was just absorbing all of their stress. And you could feel that weight on Armando just looking at him. The gravity of what they were walking into, of what was about to happen, was metaphorically just sitting there on his chest, and I could feel it. You know, how do you walk into this situation that's so new to your family? Remember, he just told them that he's gay. Now he's introducing his boyfriend, and he's going to say, not only are we dating, we're engaged, and we're going to take your grandchild who's grown up here back with us. Bye. That's a lot. And I think Armando was right and completely justified in wanting to wait to tell everyone that they're engaged. You know, the only person who would have felt 100% good about sharing the news or excited about it would have been Kenny, because he's had, what, at least 30 plus more years to prepare for this. And sure enough, they arrive and it's basically an audience waiting for them. Little Hannah comes running up. Oh, I'm probably going to cry even thinking about it. She goes, Daddy, I cried for you and I lost it. I totally lost it. It hit me just on a gut level because, as you guys know, I feel like I'm not trying to say this to brag or to bring it up or whatever again, but honestly, this is why I was a surrogate for two gay couples. We should just be spreading more love in the world and have more children from gay couples, because it just becomes the norm, just like there are traditional heterosexual couples together. Anyway, seeing her run up and be just so loving to her dad, saying she missed him, and her running into Kenny's arms, it just melted me in a great way. But it was just an ice storm. It was like Elsa and iciness from Armando's mom and the aunts and the cousins. Everyone's just staring at Kenny. And all Kenny could muster was a super awkward, hola, mucho gusto. Now, Armando said that he was physically there, but lost in his own head. And I can only imagine, this is literally worlds colliding, you know, different cultures, different languages, different sexualities, different religions. None of it should be colliding together like it was. And here it's on his shoulders to make it combine seamlessly. So let's head to the house here. Armando's dad is hiding inside because he doesn't know how to handle it. And while I don't like that he's not accepting of his son's situation, I can understand it. It doesn't happen overnight that people just accept new situations. But much like Armando said, and Kenny kind of argued later, his dad did come outside. That is a first step. You can't expect him to be running outside, you know, picking up Kenny and burping him. It's going to take him a minute. He shook his hand, I believe. He hugged Armando. It's a step. Now, then they go around the bonfire, and I was shocked that Armando actually announced the engagement. I kind of wish he would have waited. Like his mom said, you know, tell me first in private, give her a moment to process it herself before, you know, presenting it to the whole family, to the world, to whoever's going to be watching this show. It was a lot. You know, I think Kenny was really up in his head too much, much like Armando was. And I don't think it's because Kenny is a bad guy. I went on Twitter very briefly because I was curious to see how people were responding to this, I don't want to say blended family, this new situation for Armando's family and Kenny. And Kenny was getting a lot of shit. I don't think Kenny's a bad guy. I've got to think in the years of Kenny being out and being gay, a single gay father, he's been the subject to a lot of eyes and a lot of stares. Surely a lot of unkind words, to say the least. So I think Kenny was probably projecting a lot of his shit onto Armando's family, assuming they were thinking certain things. And I don't think we can fault him for that. It's what he knows. And hopefully he's proven wrong. I think it was one of the aunts said, hopefully we're invited. And again, that's a step. They're getting there. I just have all the hope in the world, and I think they're going to be a great family. Really warms my heart in the deepest place. Okay, Ariella and Binyam. I have a lot to say about this too, kind of tying into one of my surrogacies. Good news, they've at least found an apartment with a bathroom. Yay! It looks fine. I mean, would I sprawl myself out onto a naked used mattress? Never. I also wouldn't move to a third world country when I'm 9 months pregnant and tell my fiance he needs to make more money while also telling him he needs to work less because I would be lonely with the baby. Wouldn't do that either. You know, all this time, I feel like I've backed Ariella up. I haven't really understood the hate that she's gotten online, at least. I kind of get it now. You know, she needs to grow up and realize she can't have it both ways. You know, she's complaining that Binyam should be more ambitious and she wants him to be the provider, the protector. But she's also saying, I'm going to need you home more to help me with the baby. It doesn't go both ways. You're old enough to know that. And then she mentions that this bassinet that she wants at the baby store is $400 and she couldn't believe it. So her mom's going to have to come down with a lot of supplies. I feel like most of us know when you are in a different country that doesn't necessarily have all the imports and exports. I feel like George Costanza. I'm in importing and exporting. Things are going to cost more, okay? So sure, that bassinet that's going to be maybe $100 here, you're going to be paying $400 for that plastic gray coat thing there. It's just how the world economy works. Something that's very easily Googled, not to mention the fact that she lived there for a couple years. So how do you not know this shit? Then later, this whole money issue comes up because they go to look at a car. The first one they look at is like 15 years old and it costs $22,000 again because of all of those import taxes. Well, actually, I think it was a car. Oh, never mind. I was going to talk about the make and the model, but doesn't really matter because any car that you are bringing into that country, you're paying double taxes on. And that's not just Ethiopia. That's a lot of other countries throughout the world. And her saying, I just assumed things would be cheaper in Ethiopia. I can only sympathize for her parents at this point who watched that thinking, Jesus. We thought we raised a smart daughter. I wanted to kick her upside the head. And okay, well, that sounds terrible. She's a pregnant woman. I wanted to kick her. But really, while we're at it, I need to get this off my chest. You know, while she's assuming things about Ethiopia, I assumed when I'm tuning in every single week that I'm going to be looking at the same face. But here we are with a totally different Ariella mug every 24 seconds. Are you seeing this? I don't know if it's her eyebrows, or if it's her eyeliner or lack of eyeliner that's changing scene to scene, or maybe it's her lip color. I don't know. But in certain lighting, she looks really pretty. And then in other scenes, I'm like, whoa, who is that? It's like that episode of Seinfeld. She's a Two-Face. Ariella is a Two-Face. Someone make a meme of that, please. Okay, let's jump to Ariella going for an ultrasound. There's a couple things that don't make sense to me or things I want to point out as someone who has been through this. Ariella is 38, 39 weeks pregnant. She said she knew the week before that the baby was breech and she was going for another one, a checkup, hoping that the baby would turn itself at this point. Now, wouldn't she bring a bag with her, knowing that there's a possibility she might have to give birth? That's a pretty normal thing for pregnant women at this time, even if we're going to give her benefit of the doubt. She didn't know this is a different hospital system. Wouldn't she have called her mom? Like, had her mom told her, maybe you might have to deliver this baby C-section because the baby hasn't turned around? And you can feel, or at least I could feel, where the baby's head was and where the baby's bottom is, especially that far along. So in my situation, just to kind of compare and shed light on this, if you have no idea about breech babies, that means the butt's going to come out first. So the feet's going to come out first and you can't give birth vaginally that way. There's a pretty good chance you're going to have a C-section. When I went, I had already had two pregnancies that were normal. And I was like, okay, I really don't want to have a C-section. I don't want to have any complications because I'm giving birth to someone else's baby. Long list of things. Nothing against C-sections at all whatsoever, but I knew the dads wouldn't be able to be there in the operating room. I'm not going to get on my whole thing, but I will say there are very explicit instructions and very explicit information they will give you, or that you could at least look up in Google if the baby is breached. In my situation, I was a couple weeks earlier than Ariella, and even then I knew it was a very slim chance the baby was going to turn. I still tried to do the old wives' tales, like you lay upside down and the baby is then going to turn. I tried acupuncture, but about 2 weeks later, I went and I had a version done, which not every doctor will do. There's only certain doctors that are good at doing it, and most of the time, they're not that successful. But what a version is the doctor from the outside will push the baby to turn around a full 180 degrees. And lucky me, it worked. It is very uncomfortable. It's painful. You have to be ready to deliver if it doesn't go right. And luckily, everything went fine. But yeah, it feels exactly how you think it's going to feel. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is because Ariella would know at that point that a version's not an option. They're not going to do that most of the time on a woman who's that far along. She just seems to be clueless about things that she shouldn't be clueless about. She has two parents in the medical field. She has access to baby books and the internet. There's no excuse for her to be so shocked by it. And if she's going to have a C-section and she was worried about having a C-section, you had a week to look this up. You had a week to ask the doctor or to call up your parents or to tell your mom, hey, the baby's breech, you might want to come earlier. I mean, I feel badly for her that her mom's not there, but she's got to be a little bit more proactive. You know what I mean? Okay, let's move on to Tim and Melissa, because I feel like I just exhausted myself talking about pregnancy. Oof. I'm very curious what your opinions on this overall situation is, because I find myself feeling like a hypocrite, which is what I think Melissa is feeling like. Sorry, Melissa. She comes clean to her brother and her friend that she slept with someone while she and Tim were broken up. Her brother doesn't seem to think that it's really any of Tim's business. They weren't together. They were on a break and he cheated on her anyway. So don't even bring it up to him. I totally understand what he's saying here, because it'd be one thing if Tim asked Melissa, have you been with someone? And she said no, like that would be a lie. But Cheese Stick is so up in his own head that it never even occurred to him that Melissa would have a life outside him. Like he is such a prize. He hasn't even wondered if Melissa has looked at anyone else. But I can see Melissa's point that, you know, it's a little hypocritical if you expect 100% transparency and honesty from Cheese Stick. But in all honesty, she could have never said anything on camera and it could have been her little secret. Unless she actually wants Tim to know. I kind of think she wants Tim to know so that he'll lose his shit and then he's going to be the one who calls it quits. You know, then he'll go home and she can go about her fabulous single life in Colombia, sin queso. You know, there's something about him that you want to feel badly for him. He looks so stupid and innocent, but I really think he's an overindulged, spoiled man boy, little old man boy. And speaking of The Office, if you love The Office, check out our latest episode of Total Request Podcast. Amanda and I recapped the Halloween episode. Coming up this week on Total Request Podcast, we are going to be watching an episode of Roseanne. We're also going to be watching, by my request, the 1980s classic Halloween movie, The Worst Witch. It's with Tim Curry, and it was on TV all the time if you were a child from the 80s. Also, this week on Patreon, you are getting at least two bonus episodes this week, one of them being a Teen Mom 2 crossover with Amanda and I, and also my Married at First Sight recap, which will probably be up by the time you are listening to this. So check that out. Links are in the show notes. Check out my sponsors this week. I really do love Feels. I use it every single day, especially nowadays. It's pretty crazy out there. And please don't forget to leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Thank you so much for doing that. Take care of each other. Take care of yourself. Wear a damn mask and stay salty.